So as we picked up over the last couple of weeks, looking at the first two chapters of James, we've seen at times that the book of James has some parallels to the wisdom literature in the Old Testament, and in particular some echoes it has with the book of Proverbs. When we look at today's passage, it's increasingly clear how James is picking up some Old Testament thought and bringing it into the New Testament. In some ways, becoming the kind of book of Proverbs for the New Testament. And the thing with the last couple of weeks, and that runs throughout the book of James, is essentially faith. And recognising that a faith that is real, that is living and active, is going to be evident in your life. There will be something about us, the way we live our lives, in persevering through tough times, in responding practically to God's call in our lives, that will demonstrate our faith and how God is working through us. And here in chapter 3, James is drawing that same approach to wisdom. The wisdom that comes from above is going to be seen somehow working out in your life. It's going to have an impact. We'll be able to see in our actions and our approach to life how it is working out. As verse 13 says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom." So in this passage, James is starting out with that question. Who is wise and understanding among you? And hopefully as we think on that question, we would say that we are all wise in some way, shape or form. And James is going on to draw attention to the differences between the wisdom that comes from above, God's wisdom, and the world's wisdom. The earthly wisdom we see around us in the culture around us that doesn't come from God. And as a side note, we're also drawn into recognising the difference between wisdom and knowledge. Knowledge is really about facts, ideas, but wisdom is so much more than that. It's about applying truth to life, about having discernment that comes from living by godly principles, and that then having a tangible impact on our lives. But back to wisdom. Why is it that James might want to pick up on this thing of wisdom? Well, it's important. Wisdom is so important in the Jewish tradition, throughout the Old Testament, that many times in Scripture, it tells us that wisdom is more valuable than great riches. There's actually a number of places you could go with this, but let's just take one. Don't worry about turning to it. But it's Proverbs chapter 16, verse 16. How much better is it to get wisdom than gold, to choose understanding rather than silver? In other words, if someone came up to you this morning after the service and said you can have vast amounts of wealth, or you can have vast amounts of wisdom, the Bible's telling us here we choose wisdom. Wisdom is so much more valuable than wealth. In some ways, we could always think of that expression, a fool and his money are soon parted. Possibly the wealth may not stay with us if we don't have the wisdom to use it wisely. But actually it's the wisdom that is important in what we look for. So who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbour bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. So let's think about those verses. Because James is really starting to draw up here an enormous contrast. A comparison between the so-called wisdom of the age and the wisdom that comes from above. Shows the differences between them before calling us to live differently, to live according to God's wisdom, not the world's. By receiving God's wisdom as a gift from him and living according to that. Don't live by the wisdom of the culture around us, the wisdom of this age, but by God's wisdom. And we also need to pick up that actually this wisdom is a gift from God. It isn't something we generate ourselves. It's not something we learn, something we can manufacture in our own strength. But it's something that's given freely by God to us. So why then? Why should we live by God's wisdom? Well, simply because God's wisdom is higher than ours. In 1 Corinthians 1, Paul writes, "Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world?" See, the problem with wisdom that comes from the world is that unlike God's wisdom, it's not producing good fruit. And as we see here in James in verses 15 and 16, the earthly unspiritual wisdom is based on selfishness, a kind of self-centeredness, and that, if I'm honest, seems to be the foundation of so much of the culture we see around us. If you're not sure you believe me, just switch on the news and have a look at what's going on with Brexit, for example, to see signs of envy, selfish ambition, chaos and disorder. And that's not a party political point, a remain or a leave comment. But when we base our lives and our culture on our own wisdom rather than God's, we can see how it leads down that path towards those problems we see before us there. But it's wider than that. The problem with the world's philosophy, the world's wisdom, the world's way of doing things, is that often it's got a destructive influence. It can lead to an uncaring, increasingly hostile environment focused on the search for self-satisfaction, a fulfillment of our own needs ahead of anything else. We see cultures around us that are putting themselves rather than God first. And society that seems to be heading further and further away from God's wisdom. God's wisdom, the life-giving wisdom that comes from above. We see some of the problems I talked about last week, of the epidemic of loneliness that we see that we face in this country, of houses standing empty while there's people living on the streets, of increasing levels of hatred and violence around on the streets. So, what should we do about it? Well, if it's clear that the negative result of living by the world's wisdom is what we see around us, then as Christians and as the church, we need to draw a line underneath that and to decide to live lives based on this different kind of wisdom. Lives lived by God's wisdom. To be the salt and the light in our communities, demonstrating another way to live. To be people who bring light into the dark places and reflecting God's wisdom in our lives. And as we continue on through James here, we get a picture of what that might look like. What the traits of this life lived by God's wisdom might be. First of all, James says that wisdom from God is pure. It comes from God, so it kind of has to be. But it doesn't have an ulterior motive. God isn't giving us this wisdom because he's trying to trick us in some way, but because he loves us and wants the very best for us. And as we embrace this wisdom, it becomes part of the process of us being refined, of us being made pure by a pure God. Secondly, the result of God pouring out his wisdom on us is that we love peace. Now, to love peace doesn't mean we avoid conflict at all costs, but that peace is our starting point. Sometimes we do need to say that and be counted, but this is about our default setting, our first response, our gut feel to what's happening in front of us, before we've perhaps had a chance to think about it. And as a church, and as Christians, we're not, or at least we shouldn't be, the agitators, the people stirring up trouble and causing conflict. The wisdom we bring to a situation should bring a sense of peace, of diffusing the situation rather than adding fuel to the fire. But in the midst of conflict, we can be the voice of peace. So we have purity, a lack of ulterior motives, and a love of peace. And thirdly, God's wisdom is considerate. And if we add the next one of being submissive to this as well, we can see a bit of a trend forming here. This is not about looking after our own self-interests, but about the wisdom from above being demonstrated in the way we act around others, putting the needs of others before ourselves as we consider the things we do in life. It should be seen in the relationships we have, both within and outside the church. We should be people who reflect that servant heart of God by our acts of service to those around us. And that echoes what we saw last week, in our faith being demonstrated by its practical outworking. It's not about seeing someone hungry and without clothes and wishing them well and doing nothing, but by clothing and feeding them, in doing something about it. Which is why we prayed there's the agencies we support, be it math, be it leprosy, be it food bank. It's about doing something about it. And that will at times mean that we need to make sacrifices. Sometimes the thing that we might want, the thing that is more about me than I, will need to take second place to the act of service we do for someone else. God's wisdom is considerate and submissive. It's not about pushing ourselves forward, but being prepared to listen and to bring peace from pure motives. As we carry on, wisdom from above is full of mercy and good fruit. Full of mercy. Not a little bit of mercy, but full. And if we look back to chapter 2, verse 13, we're reminded that mercy triumphs over judgment. Sometimes, and I hold my hand up to be guilty of this more than probably anyone, but when we're looking around our culture and society, we see what is going on and feel that there is some need of judgment within it. That we see how people are living their lives, the things they are doing, and there's some sense that there's a judgment coming on there because they're so far from God. But we need to remind ourselves that in those times, mercy is more important. It triumphs over judgment. We think of Matthew 5, blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Or in 1 Corinthians 13, from the passage talking about love, we see Paul describing others not being easily provoked, that it doesn't keep a record of wrongs. And I think there we're seeing a picture of what mercy really is. And mercy is important because we need it. None of us is perfect. We all fall short of the things we ought to do. And if we need to receive this mercy, then surely we ought to be demonstrating it as well. Blessed are the merciful, because they will receive mercy. And thankfully we have a merciful God who operates from a position of grace and love. And here James is telling us that when we live our lives by God's wisdom, it is demonstrated through each of us being full of mercy. So mercy and good fruit. And I'm sure we can bring to mind good fruit that Paul talks of in Galatians 5. The 9 fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Nice. And interesting, last week, as part of my work week, I was at the Oasis Centre in London. And one of the things they've done there is there was a school, a secondary school, that was really struggling. And it was a school there, none of the teachers wanted to be there, none of the pupils really wanted to be there. And it was failing by every measure that was there at the time. And talking through with Steve Chalk, who not dropping any names or anything, he was saying about when they took over the school, they were thought of being mad. But one of the key components Steve talked about in turning that school around, and it's now got outstanding on every measure of Ofsted, the key measure that they used was introducing 9 key values to the school. Of the school looking to become a living, breathing example of those values, and how the school went about things, the way it treated pupils and staff. And although they were labelled as the Oasis 9 values, rather than as fruit of the Spirit, that's exactly what they were. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. And by concentrating on producing good fruit, they saw a change in behaviour, of the trajectory of pupils going from down there to up there, the results improving, behaviour improving, to the point where both teachers and pupils want to be in the school. So we're going to be there, last 2 traits together. Wisdom is impartial and sincere. Our lives lived by the wisdom from above, by being filled with God's wisdom. I lived out in what we say and what we do. And then in that, we need to be sincere. This is not about pretending to be something other than we are. Because as we all know, God sees into our hearts, into our motives. He knows where we're at. But we need to be honest with him. But this also picks up on the theme of faith being shown as being alive by how we live our lives, the chapter 2 heaven. By the things we say and we do. And about persevering when we come against tough times. And in those times, showing mercy, being peace-loving and considerate. And most of all, demonstrating the purity that comes from God. So maybe let's just take a moment. Let's think through our lives and whether they are a demonstration of this worldly wisdom we see around us, or wisdom from above. Perhaps let's reflect on what God might have been saying to us this morning. And as we do that, maybe we need to be asking God to pour out his wisdom into our lives. That we be people who demonstrate those traits of being pure, peace-loving, full of mercy and good fruit, considerate, impartial and sincere. That we receive his gift to us and then we embrace it. In the words of James 1, we would be doers of the word rather than being hearers. And to be honest, if there's anything particular you feel challenged by, any of those traits, be they good or bad, be you challenged by it, maybe talk to God about that. But don't forget to ask God for that good gift, that gift of wisdom that comes from above.